Good morning. I'm Richard C. Hottolett with the CBS World News Roundup. President Carter will speak at 1:30 this afternoon Eastern Time. His audience will be the American Society of Newspaper Editors in a Washington hotel. But CBS radio microphones and television cameras will be there, and the country will be listening to what the president has to say about turning back the inflation, which seems to be creeping upward again. CBS News White House correspondent Ed Bradley outlines Mr. Carter's thoughts.
The president will not ask for wage and price controls or even the standby authority to invoke those measures. The speech is expected to detail a series of executive-level actions and will attempt to make it clear that controlling inflation is not something government can do alone. One aide said it's a no-nonsense speech devoid of any comforting illusions, and when asked for a theme, he said only half in jest, there is no salvation without sacrifice. Mr. Carter is expected to ask for a cut in the scheduled pay raise for federal workers and, in an effort to slash rising lumber costs, an increase in the timber harvests of federal lands. Mr. Carter will also waive the threat of his presidential veto over the farm bill passed by the Senate and any other legislation he considers inflationary. He'll also urge Congress to take action on the energy bill, airline deregulation, and the measure to hold hospital costs in line. And there will be a strong appeal to business and labor to use voluntary restraint on wage and price increases. The president hopes the combination of government and private sector action will reverse the climb towards double-digit inflation. Ed Bradley, CBS News, Washington.
A showdown on the emergency farm bill is due in the House of Representatives later this week, with a vote on the bill already passed by the Senate. The House, with its larger urban representation, may not be willing to approve a measure that will raise the price of food in order to help the farmer. On March 19th, the United Nations Security Council adopted a resolution drafted and strongly pressed by the United States calling on Israel to withdraw its forces forthwith from all Lebanese territory. Until today, despite growing criticism of its noncompliance, Israel has not moved. But now it has taken the first of two moves to pull some troops back from forward positions. More on this from Bruno Wassertile.
Today, exactly 4 weeks after Israeli troops thrust into Lebanon, they began moving out. This morning, they started evacuating the extreme eastern corner of southern Lebanon, handing over control of the area to Norwegian contingents of the multinational UN peacekeeping force. The commander of the United Nations interim force in Lebanon, Ghanaian General Emmanuel Erskine, was briefed by Israeli officers in the field as the handover took place. Most of the Israelis' heavy military hardware was already rolled back several days ago, and today only a small number of soldiers and army trucks picking up barbed wire and other odds and ends marked the Israeli exodus. Another pullback is set for Friday, but this will still leave Israel in control of most of the 800 square miles of Lebanese territory it captured in its lightning assault last month. Observers here believe that a timetable for future pullbacks will depend largely on how well the UN forces keep the peace in southern Lebanon and how effective they are in preventing Palestinian guerrillas from moving back into the border region with Israel. Bruno Wassertile for CBS News in Tel Aviv.
UN headquarters is waiting for the next development in the case of Arkady Shevchenko. Shevchenko was the highest-ranking Soviet official in the UN Secretariat, holding the post of Under-Secretary General for Political and Security Council Affairs until he defected over the weekend. He is now in hiding, apparently somewhere in the New York area, and his plans for the future are not known. It is not known whether he has asked for asylum in the United States, but the U.S. says it would have no objection to his staying in this country. The terrorists who are trying to bring down Italian democracy struck again last night at the machinery of justice. Jerry Bowen has the story.
A prison guard has been killed, a doctor wounded. Both attacks in Turin, where 15 members of the Red Brigade terrorist group are being held in prison. But police have not linked either attack to the Red Brigades or the group's abduction of former Prime Minister Aldo Moro. The prison guard was ambushed and killed as he left his apartment this morning, but one of his attackers was wounded and later captured by police. The man's two companions escaped but left behind the car they used. In the vehicle, police found a German-made machine gun. Last night, five members of the so-called armed proletarian squads raided a medical clinic in Turin, wounding a doctor in the arms and legs. Both incidents followed the fifth and latest letter from Moro's kidnappers, a letter which stated that no secret deals are being made for Moro's release, that he is still standing trial in a people's court. But one of Rome's major newspapers reports the Red Brigades may be demanding the giveaway of food or money to the poor as ransom for Moro's release. The newspaper Il Messaggero speculated the demands were in a message delivered to Moro's wife over the weekend, a message over which the government has clamped a lid of secrecy. Officially, at least, the government continues to rule out any negotiations with Moro's kidnappers. Jerry Bowen, CBS News, Rome.
A court in West Berlin has begun the trial of six German self-styled urban guerrillas. Paul Moore reports.
The federal prosecutor's office says the six defendants kidnapped Berlin's Christian Democrat leader, Peter Lorand, in February 1975 and murdered Judge Günther von Drenkmann in November 1974. Additional charges include 10 bank robberies and the burglary of a firearms dealer. The police still want three young women in connection with the kidnapping and murder charges, but they broke out of jail here and remain at large. The Berlin justice authorities have spent about $2 million on courthouse security measures without precedent here. The court expects the trial to last at least a year with about 600 witnesses testifying. The six accused have 21 lawyers to defend them. Paul Moore for CBS News, Berlin.
Court proceedings were recessed shortly after the court opened when defense lawyers complained that the scale of security measures surrounding the trial prejudiced their client's chance of a fair trial. A fully laden supertanker, the 257,000-ton Texaco Copenhagen, is reported to be drifting helplessly off the eastern coast of South Africa. Authorities in Durban say the tanker is without power after an engine room blackout about 12 miles out to sea in winds that are near gale force and likely to get stronger today. 1 week from today, the U.S. Senate votes on the second Panama Canal Treaty, a vote which seems all the more uncertain because of a reservation tacked on to the first treaty by Senator Dennis DeConcini of Arizona. Panama protested bitterly in public and in private about this action, which seemed to make the situation worse. Now, reports David Dow, Panama appears, however anxiously, to be sitting tight.
After sounding an alarm signal last week, Panamanian officials have abruptly sealed up comment on the DeConcini reservation to the Panama Canal Neutrality Treaty approved by the U.S. Senate last month. At a Miami stopover en route back to the U.S., Panama's ambassador to the U.S., Gabriel Luis, said only that he put faith in the American people to do what was right. The DeConcini reservation would allow the U.S. unilaterally to take military action in Panama to reopen the canal if it were closed for any reason after Panama takes control in the year 2000. It's been widely criticized by a variety of interests here as a potential affront to Panamanian sovereignty. In an interview over the past weekend, Panama's leader, General Omar Torrijos, called the reservation utterly unnecessary. But his government now stresses it will withhold any further comment or a decision on the resolution until after the Senate acts on the second of the canal treaties next week. David Dow, CBS News, Panama.
Leading senators and administration figures are trying to calm things down in Washington. Senator Frank Church yesterday strongly urged his colleagues to reaffirm U.S. pledges against intervention in Panama's domestic affairs. But the opposition is using every opportunity to press its case. Phil Jones reports.
Opponents of the treaties are seizing on this controversy to try again to derail the treaties. Some senators want the Panamanians to issue a formal statement declaring whether they will accept the DeConcini intervention reservation. And Republican Robert Griffin plans to seek action next week to send the treaties back to President Carter for further direct negotiations with Panama. It is the feeling among key Senate leaders that Arizona Senator Dennis DeConcini will decide the fate of the Panama Canal treaties. The question is, will Senator DeConcini accept attempts to soften the impact of his reservation? If he will, then Panama will be able to save face. If he doesn't, Panamanian objections will continue, and the second treaty scheduled for a vote next week may not be ratified. Senator DeConcini will meet with President Carter this week. Phil Jones, CBS News, Washington.
Senate Republican leader Baker says the second treaty should pass.